Oh, look, here's Lyra, back from the dead. A miracle. Welcome in to the Bro 4 Squad podcast, where we are just a bunch of bros drinking beer and talking movies. This is episode 221, and I am your host, the mayor, Jeff Hornacek. Thank you guys so much for checking us out for the movie discussion tonight. Before we get started, let's go around and meet the fellow bros. We start with our legal counsel, Ronnie Cycli. Ronnie, what is the most sexually charged game of one-on-one basketball you've ever played, and was it with a Catwoman?
It was actually with Halle Berry. But I was also like 7 years old, so I didn't know what was going on. She just took my ball away from me and then just started rubbing up on me, and it was, I don't know, I started asking myself all sorts of questions, but I eventually did get my ball back, which was good.
Okay, did you win, though? That's all anyone cares about.
Oh, I won.
But at what cost? All right, next we go to the mad scientist, Brian Banner. Banner, if you designed a suit made of steel / rubber, would you entrust it to Shaquille O'Neal and let him fight crime on the streets of Los Angeles?
I mean, probably. I think deep down, Shaq's a good guy. Yeah, I think so.
What about on the surface? Not, let's forget about deep down.
Yeah,
what
deep
about
like? Down.
I mean, it's just a lot of surface to cover. Oh, he's true. Just a big guy. You know what I mean?
Onions have layers, and if you peel the outer,
he's not a fucking ogre.
It's about the size of him.
That was a Shrek reference.
Do you think, like, if Shrek was, like, on an NBA court, would he be, like, a power forward? I know he's got strong lower body. But how,
yeah, like, he's like a Kendrick Perkins. He's just going to clog shit up and look mean.
But also be awful.
Yes.
Yes.
And be overrated. Okay. Here on the Bro 4 Squad, we start every podcast off. The most important thing in any bro's life, and that is chest day. And today's chest day topic, we are diving in to our annual Movie Madness Tournament since it is March. This year, lucky for everyone, it is awful comic book movie madness. The bracket has been underway. Our last episode, episode 219, was our selection show where we selected the 8 movies that are awful comic book films, really like questionable decisions to be greenlit. And match them all up against each other.
Why? Today,
why, exactly. Why the tournament? Why these movies?
It's a lot.
Why? A lot of, yeah.
Why do we do it to ourselves? I don't know.
Just having watched several of these this past week, I think we're all on a couple, like, watch lists for, like, a lot of teledoc mental health therapy websites, things like that.
They've been checking in. They've been checking in.
It's good, like a welfare check. So there are 8 movies. The bracket is linked at the bottom of this podcast episode. We're going to go through the 4 matchups in the first round, one of which you guys at home voted on. The other 3 we're going to decide here on pod. And then the final 4, starting next week, we'll actually let you guys vote on as fans. So we'll put the link out there. But I guess before we dive into it, Cycli and or Banner, either one of you can take this and run with it. Why don't you really describe like what this tournament is? Because we've been describing it as a tournament of futility, basically meaning that by quote unquote winning or advancing to the next round, you're actually the worse of the 2 movies in that matchup, which I know is counterintuitive, but it's really the only way we can do this, right?
Yeah, this is very confusing. It isn't, but it is, right? So you have these 2 movies, and if you... I look at it as you have to answer the question, why? Why was this made? Like, why did we need this?
If you justify can answer yourself.
Yes, and whichever one can justify itself better loses by winning.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as like, why is the winner always crowned? You know, doesn't the loser deserve to be crowned?
This is the toilet bowl, guys.
Right.
It's the toilet bowl.
And why do we only acknowledge it? I think you should acknowledge sometimes something that is so bad, it's almost impressive.
Yeah, I mean,
these movies have massive budgets. They have big cast members. Like, there's not a reason for these to be this awful. So that's why it's fun to take a look at some of these abominations.
Yeah, who's the best at being the worst? Well, we're going to find out tonight. The first matchup we had, and again, you don't have to click on the bracket in the description, but it'll be a little bit easier to follow along, was Madam Web. Like, obviously, the most recent by far, because it came out like 3 weeks ago. It might even still be in theaters as you're listening to this.
I doubt
it. There's no way this is still in theaters.
This is maybe that Blockbuster on only VHS.
Yeah, or that like dollar theater, remember, in our hometown? Yes. Probably wouldn't even touch this.
Movies 8, baby.
Madam Web versus Catwoman. Cycly, do you bracket up by chance?
I don't, but I have it in my head.
Well, I was going to have you read the score. Banner, do you have it up?
Yeah.
No one does. Yeah, okay, perfect. Banner, by percentage of fan vote, why don't you let the people know how Madam Web and Catwoman fared against one another and who is advancing, meaning they suck worse?
So this is 79% for Madam Web, 21% for Catwoman. So Madam Web is dominantly the worst movie here.
Now, in the seating, we really just put these in the order that we drew them in. But, Banner, would you say that Madam Web, and it could definitely be recency bias, but it really kind of is the impetus that we started this tournament with. Would you say Madam Web is the movie to beat, like by far the worst of this list? Or do you think that there's actually some movies out there that, even though they don't have the presence of being top of mind, they're just as shitty and can definitely give Madam Web a run for its money?
I think at the end of the day, Madam Web is like your Duke, right? Like everybody, nobody's going to be surprised if this wins, but also I wouldn't be surprised if it loses either.
It's going to get every movie's best shot.
Yeah. And there's some on the other side of the bracket that's going to give it its run for the money, in my opinion.
Yeah. Now, Cycly, this is a great matchup for you to start with because as recently as an hour ago, you sick fuck, watched Catwoman.
So yeah, is everything okay at home?
It's been on my bucket list for years. Guys, I don't have much longer, and I was like, how can I make this more painful?
I was going to say, that probably sped up your death. Or
I actually started begging for it. I was actually accepted my death.
Just came to terms with it.
Yeah. So, Cycly, I know you haven't seen Madam Web. We've read extensively about it, but seeing that it faced off against Catwoman, what are your thoughts on, I guess, number one, this matchup in general, because Madam Web is almost like, I don't want to say like a, it's like an urban legend. Like, is it really as bad as people say it is? But then also, you just watched Catwoman, so that's another movie too. Like, was that as shitty as we've always been led to believe? Because I don't think I've ever seen it, to be honest.
So I really like this matchup because they kind of mirror each other in a lot of ways. I think felines or cats have a more feminine instinct to just the way we look at it, cats as humans, and so do spiders when we think of like black widows and like the female spider eats the husband spider and all that kind of stuff. So we have like two female characters who have based on those kind of creatures that have feminine traits and kind of movies that you're not really sure if they're who the audience is for. Maybe they're trying to bring in more of a female audience or woo men in with like, you know, Halle Berry. It's like, oh, she's a hot thing. Like, let's put her in like torn up leather and that will sell. But I, as someone who just finished Catwoman, literally, I will say, I mean, we can get into this. I don't want to get too far into this because I'm sure we'll debate this here in a second. The story itself isn't bad. It like the actual concept of what they're trying to do is not awful. And the movie itself starts at like 20 minutes of it's pretty normal. And it kind of follows Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman from Batman Returns. Kind of like she's this like clumsy, unconfident girl, works at a place where the boss is kind of corrupt and mean. But it had potential. I'll say that. And I understand why they kind of went the direction they went to. It was very mid-2000s.
Is her boss at this like bit company, is it anyone we would know? Because this one for cast, I know it has Sharon Stone, Benjamin Bratt, and Halle Berry, but was anyone else willing to basically change this?
I don't know his name, but I only know him as the French architect from The Matrix. Or what was his name? Not the architect. Maybe he's the architect. But you know, the Frenchman they meet at the restaurant.
He has an awesome too.
Yeah, and he's like taunting them with the cake that gives orgasms.
Yeah. What is his name?
I don't know his name, but I was like, hey, it's that French guy from The Matrix. That's what he's known for.
Of course,
He's not, because they go to him because they were going for the key. Man, now we're going to have a conversation about Matrix.
The Merovingian.
Merovingian, that's right. Yeah. But yes, yeah, he's the boss.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So, but do you think the fans got it right here, Madam Web advancing?
Yeah, I do. I think the fans absolutely got it right. This movie is bad, but it has all, like, it just made some choices for some reason. Like the basketball scene, a couple of the fight scenes are ridiculous. It's just, it made a choice to be awful because at the core of it, it's not that, like, again, the story isn't inherently bad.
If they would have zigged instead of zagged in a couple of spots, this is a good movie. But they didn't.
I mean, they made some really awful choices. Like, really awful. Like,
surprisingly enough, budget for Madam Web, $80 million. Budget for Catwoman, $100 million.
Jesus Christ. I mean, that's like $300 million.
On what?
Halle Berry.
Box office for Catwoman, $82.1 million. Box office for Madam Web, $91.7 million.
But I'm wondering,
now, I don't know how inflation and all that bullshit plays into that, but hey, those are really close numbers.
Well, I got to say that, yeah, inflation-wise, Catwoman probably had more butts in seats so far, but had a full run. Madam Web hasn't had a full run. But I'm guessing Madam Web has, you know, we have the worldwide audience now, China and everything. I don't know how. Mid-2000s, I don't think cared about the China market. International market as a whole.
If you live in China and you're going to see Madam Web, God bless you. For the smartest country on earth, you're making bets. Okay, we're going to score the next three matchups, and there are 3 points to be delivered to the worst of these two movies facing off against each other that will be delivered by one of the bros each. So, these are the 3 points. Which movie had the worst box office potential? So basically, when this movie was green light, did it have an audience? Like, why are we making this? Do we think this will ever make money? The second one is the cast. So did the studio hire the right or good actors? Basically, did you put people in this film that would ever give it a chance at being successful? Yes or no? And then the last one, and this is good even if we haven't seen some of these films, but I think we've all seen at least one in every matchup. The script or the plot. So what the fuck was the story, and would this have ever worked to get people to go see this film? I guess I'm cool with going in the middle every time if you guys want to flip like first and last.
Sure.
For each of them.
Yeah.
So, Banner, I guess we'll let you go first for the first one. I'm just going to draw. I have 3 numbers in front of me, and one of them corresponds to one of the points. This matchup is Morbius versus Jonah Hex. So if you're looking at the bracket, this is the second matchup. Morbius starring Jared Leto. Of course, Jonah Hex with Josh Brolin. Banner, you will go first. Okay. I have drawn a number one. Box office potential. So between Morbius and Jonah Hex, both you know, a little more obscure characters, which I think is going to be the trend here. Which of these do you think had the worst box office potential? Meaning, really, regardless of who's behind it or even how good the movie is, would this have ever made money? And why?
I need to preface this with, I watched Morbius. I finished it like last night or maybe the night before. So it is very fresh in my mind. It's been.
Was that the first time you've seen it?
That was the first time I've seen it. Yes. Okay. Why? I'm not a sick fuck. I haven't seen it more than once since it came out.
Who would do that?
Jesus. Once was enough. And it took me 2 sittings. Okay. But yeah, wait for our commentary to come out on it.
We almost did it tonight.
We almost did it tonight. Yeah.
It's only because I watched it today. I was like, I don't know if I can do this twice.
Yeah, that's like, that actually is a health risk at that point.
Yeah. But as far as the box office potential, yeah, I got it. I think that Jonah Hex probably had a better box office potential. You've got some decent names in it coming out. It's a different era in the, you know, the Civil War time. Morbius, like, for it's in the Spider-Man universe, but Spider-Man's not fucking in it. And you miss the vampire, like, craze. You're about 10 years late for that. It just, I don't know. I think that this point goes to Morbius as being worse, right? There is no point, and nobody wants this. Jared Leto's not like this crazy hot guy right now.
True. I'll tell him that.
Well, I didn't mean like physically. I just meant like Hollywood E.
Don't tell him that.
I don't remember how Jonah Hex was marketed, but you could almost just sell it as like a straight up Civil War epic. And I feel like that would be better for its box office. Morbius definitely tried the bait and switch. Like they threw Michael Keaton's Vulture from Spider-Man Homecoming in the trailer, which in a scene that isn't even in the movie. So that's pretty desperate to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're just trying to make a buck. And I mean, they made what, $48 the second time they released it? Good job, internet.
That's Psych, and I did a whole episode on that. It's one of my favorite things of all time. The Sony getting pranked into re-releasing more.
Then they try to prank again, be like, we were all busy that weekend. Do it again.
Yeah, you didn't even ask us. Okay, so Bader, you say Morbius gets the point in futility. They had the worst box office potential, right?
Yes.
Okay. I will go next. In the middle, I am drawing from my numbers, and I pick number 3, the worst script or plot. All right, I've seen both these movies, luckily. Just watched Jonah Hex this past week. Let me read you, according to IMDb, the plot synopses of both these movies. We'll start with Morbius. According to IMDb, if my page scrolls up. Biochemist Michael Morbius tries to cure himself of a rare blood disease, but he inadvertently infects himself with a form of vampirism instead. Apparently vampirism is a word. So these are both origin stories, although Jonah Hex, I'll say in about 30 seconds why it's not. Jonah Hex's plot, U.S. military makes a scarred bounty hunter with warrants on his own head, an offer he cannot refuse. In exchange for his freedom, he must stop a terrorist who is ready to unleash hell on Earth.
Bum, bum, bum.
Okay, script and plot. Jonah Hex, I'll do with that one first since I watched it most recently. It's, I told you guys off pod, it's an origin story, but it does not show his origin. Like, it tells the origin basically in the opening credits. I think because it really wants you to know that it is going to be a Civil War epic or post-Civil War epic and not focus so much on the supernatural elements that are what make Jonah Hex Jonah Hex, which really begs the question of, like, why did they make this move? I mean, it's not like Jonah Hex is such a... Such a
Just
strong
make a Western.
IP. Right. It's not like Jonah Hex is such a strong IP that you slap it on a Western and people are like, oh, fuck yeah, I love that comic book character. So it doesn't really lean too much into the superhero aspect of it. In fact, it almost seems like embarrassed about it because it shoves it under the rug within the first 10 minutes. The Morbius script, I just don't think there's anything unique about it. I mean, we talked about this. I don't know if this was cycling me on the phone earlier, but like the villain does the classic mistake that Marvel and DC have done a million times where it's just a evil version of the good guy. And Cycle and I were laughing about how the villain, his relationship to Morbius, like they've been brothers and best friends for like 30 years. Morbius does one thing he doesn't like and he's like, oh, well, fuck that. I hate you forever. I have to kill you. It's all like...
And it was something to save his own life too.
Erroneous.
Right? Like... The bad guy literally did it to save his own life. And then was like, Morbius is like, I told you not to do it. He's like, so I had to choose to die? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like you don't have any rationale behind that. So I'll say worst script is in plot is going to go with Morbius because I at least think Jonah Hex, it does work a little bit as just like a Civil War era biopic with a pretty cool villain in John Malkovich. And it's unique. And Morbius to me, I think this is like the epitome of superhero fatigue where it's like, okay, power set is kind of interesting, I guess, like a guy that can turn into a vampire and like kind of fly around. But everything else by it is paint by numbers. Like the villain is your best friend who turned against you and he's the exact same thing as you. It's just nothing there like would get people out to the theater.
They tried to shove a love story in the middle.
It was really so weird. Yeah. So unfortunately, Cycly, your point won't decide the matchup, but I do think it's important for people who bet in Vegas because Morbius wins 2-0 already because it has worst box office and script plot. But as far as the cast goes, which of these two films do you think has the worst cast?
Guys, it's a clean sweep. It is Morbius taking the L all the way. I mean, look, this is pretty... One, I hate Jared Leto, Leto, however you say his fucking name. Like, I think he's one of the biggest douchebags in Hollywood. Unfortunately, I have a number of his films in my top 100 that he doesn't lead in except for one. Okay. But that was way before he was, you know, kooky. But outside of him, we have Matt Smith, who I know from House of the Dragon.
He's also in Doctor Who, I believe.
Yeah, he's in Doctor Who, but like, I didn't really know him from that. And I'm like, he's a good villain. He's playing that role kind of in House of the Dragon. And then Jared Harris, who's the doctor, who I fucking love.
I loved him. He's Moriarty in the Downey Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, and Jeff, I don't think you've watched it, Brian. I'm not sure if you have, but he's a lead in Chernobyl. And Chernobyl is maybe one of the greatest pieces of a series I've ever seen in my life. You guys need to watch it if you haven't. It's five episodes that will just take your breath away. And he's phenomenal. So we have three decent, I mean, again, I'm not, take away what you feel about Jared Leto. Like, he's a name, and I get that. But
don't forget Tyrese.
Tyrese. Oh my god, I forgot. Yeah, Tyrese is in this. Yeah.
Apparently had a subplot that was cut out where he was supposed to, like,
okay, that makes more sense, because Tyrese's plot made no sense. It was like he was like a lazy cop. He's like, his partner is like, are you gonna work or anything? Just stand there. I'm like, what is this buddy cop thing all of a sudden that doesn't go anywhere? I forgot about that. But okay, the cast for Jonah Hex is unreal. If it was today, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, Josh Brolin, John Malkovich, Megan Fox, Michael Fassbender, Will Arnett, like, that's...
Michael Shannon has a cameo
Michael Shannon's in this too. Like, that's powerful cast. That's
fucking wild.
It's interesting because obviously this movie is panned and, you know, looked at...
And Malkovich is actually really good in it. I like him a lot.
I love Malkovich. I mean, he's fucking, you know, but like, if I saw that cast for any film, first of all, I would think that's like a... Quentin Tarantino or what are those brothers? What are their names? Coen brothers. You know, like, I was like, that's what I would think. Like, oh shit, what a cast here. Megan Fox, maybe not as big now as she was 10 years ago, but still. So I think this is I don't know if you guys agree with me on this, but I think this is an easy sweep. Yeah, like, I don't see it.
And I'm with Cycli. Like, if Jared Leto is your lead dog in the cast fight, like, you've already kind of lost me, because I just don't think the juice is worth the squeeze with him. I think he acts like for himself and not for the project, and it's really off-putting. I cannot imagine being on set with him.
God, yeah, just read about him.
I'd rather Thurman not. And I, that movie he was in a few years ago called, I think it was The Little Things with Remy Malek and Denzel. And Jared Leto, like, adds this weird, like, fucking lip to his character, and we're just like, dude, you can tell that was not on the page. He's like, what if my character had like an old war injury? We're like, hey, what if he didn't?
That movie was so disappointing.
What a wet fart, dude. Yeah. I hate to get off topic, but yeah, that was really fucking bad. All right, Morbius, clean sweep in futility. It will advance to the second round of the tournament. This is the matchup we all wanted, guys. Morbius and Madam Web. I mean, unfortunately, the way the bracket worked out, it can't be the finals, but this is going to be the highest rated television game.
Many people are saying this is the final. I'm hearing. Yeah. It's like the SEC championship.
The winner, whoever, or basically the loser, just has to make sure they don't have a letdown after this. Yeah, because the emotions.
The emotions are going to, yep, that's, I was just about to say it.
Madam Web just had nothing left after the game. All right, next up, Blue Beetle taking on Steel. So again, we have a much newer film, Blue Beetle, which came out in 2023. And then Steel, starring, and this will definitely come into play, Shaquille O'Neal, came out in 1997. Let's go to Cycli for the first point to be given out. Cycli, the random papers that I have drawn say that you have to decide, once again, script and plot. So, the plot for Blue Beetle. An alien scarab chooses Jaime Reyes to be its symbolic host, bestowing the recent college graduate with a suit of armor that's capable of extraordinary powers, forever changing his destiny as he becomes the superhero known as Blue Beetle. And the plot synopsis for Steel. A scientist for the military turns himself into a cartoon-like superhero when a version of one of his own weapons is being used against enemies. That's not very accurate to the movie, but that's what you're going to have to work with. Worst script / plot, Blue Beetle or Steel? What do you think?
God damn it. Oh, this is a toss-up. Can you give me Blue Beetle again? I need to do this. Like, I really need to break this down.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're taking this seriously.
Yeah.
An alien scarab chooses Jaime Reyes to be its symbolic host, bestowing the recent college graduate with a suit of armor that's capable of extraordinary powers and changing his destiny as he becomes the superhero known as Blue Beetle.
Yeah, I'll probably go with Steel here based on that, because at least with Blue Beetle, I can see it as like a symbolism of growing up and leaving home and changing things and just this idea that like you have more to give in life than you've been living. Whereas, man, the Steel one is just peak 90s type, just throw a plot together and give it some action and put a name in there. And like, I'm like, how, that sounds so ridiculous. So I think I'm going to give the point to Steel.
Having just watched Steel, I can tell you there is no plot to it.
This was such a 90s, this is the thing about 90s films.
They're a hell of a lot of fun.
They're fun, but there's not a plot. I mean, the plot is super thin, and they're getting, I think of like the Batman movies and things like that in the 90s. It's like, they're just getting your butt in the seat. And then you're like, I don't know what I just got.
I mean, these scripts had to be like 30 something pages. By the way, the pitch you just made for the Blue Beetle script, probably more impassioned than anyone who worked on the project to DC. So
I'm just saying, I can swallow that, right? Like coming of age type story. Yeah. Like, This is like, again, Steel. Like, if you put in Steven Seagal instead of Shaq, it's one of his movies. That's all of his movies sound like.
That is true.
Yeah.
All right, Steel up 1-0 because it is the worst script and plot. I will go second. I drew box office potential. So I had just watched Steel. I have not seen Blue Beetle, but that's okay because that'd be a perfect one for box office potential. And Banner, I know you just saw Blue Beetle, so this will be perfect for you to end with. Which of these I think has the worst box office potential? So this is tough. I am going to say Blue Beetle has the worst box office potential of the two of these. Steel coming out in 1997. I think we learned from Kazam that even though Shaquille O'Neal is certainly not, and he shouldn't be, but he's not an extremely talented actor, even though he has charisma, you could slap him on a project and it would indubitably make money. Like, I know Cycle, you and me as 90s kids, we probably would have gone to see, like, I think this was actually a little too violent for me in 97, but like Kazam, I saw in theaters.
I mean, they're playing off Michael Jordan and Space Jam too. It's like, do you remember these guys hosted SNL? Like, athletes were like involved. It wasn't this weird thing. So I get it too.
And Blue Beetle, not to take the wind out of your sails, Banner, but the cast, a lot of unknowns around it, like unless you count George Lopez and Susan Sarandon, who like are not putting people in butts and seats. But that's a character who you watch the trailer and just aesthetically looks exactly like Iron Man. And like most people don't know who it is. Like they don't know that it's an obscure DC character. Even if it does have an interesting origin story, which I don't know if Jaime Reyes does, it's not like an IP that gets, I mean, I feel like that's...
He doesn't.
It's like we're at the bottom of the barrel, right? And we're scraping for Blue Beetle.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one, Horns.
And I'm going to say, as far as cast goes, Blue Beetle is going to have the worst cast as well. A lot of unknowns. And if you're, I wouldn't even say secondary characters, is it thirdary characters? And yes, George Lopez is what you're expecting to put butts in the seats. Like, that's just not going to work. Whereas Steel, like you said, I mean, it's Shaquille O'Neal. He's going to put butts in the seats. He did it for years in the NBA. He's going to do it in the movie theaters as well.
Judd Nelson is the villain in Steel, and I don't think I've ever seen a character with less motivation. Like, literally his motivation for putting guns on the streets is like stuff blow up good. Like, you never learn anything beyond that as to why he's doing this. And the whole movie, he's trying to get revenge, quote unquote, against Shaquille O'Neal. Do you want to know why he wants revenge against Shaquille O'Neal's character? Because in the opening scene of the movie, Judd Nelson turns up this weapon too high because he wants to impress someone from the Pentagon. And
in doing,
kind of. And in doing so, he blows up this building that collapses on Shaquille O'Neal's, like one of the army sergeants he works with, and paralyzes that woman. And Shaquille O'Neal, in court, tells them Judd Nelson paralyzed this woman. So he wants revenge on Shaquille O'Neal for holding him accountable for paralyzing an innocent soldier. Like, what?
Yeah.
How dare you told people I paralyzed that chick, dick?
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that Steel, I mean, this is the interesting about these matchups, like Steel surviving.
Yeah, by surviving, we mean getting to go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a badge Shaq will wear proudly. I mean, the guy does every commercial imaginable. He'll be like, Steel, not the worst movie.
Yeah. So Blue
Hell, Beetle he does commercials advance. That are better than the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. So Blue Beetle will advance by a score of 2-1. Again, this is a futility tournament. So if you lose, you move on. If you suck worse, you advance. This brings us to the last matchup of the first round, which is Howard the Duck from 1986, which is, I believe, the first Marvel comic property to be turned into a live-action theatrical movie, going up against Elektra from 2005, the spin-off sequel prequel no one knows, because spoiler alert for Daredevil, if you don't want to know, skip it 30 seconds. Elektra dies at the end of Daredevil, but then she just shows up in this movie. There's like an offhanded comment that she was resurrected, but also it could be a prequel no one even
was it like in the movie knows. Somehow Palpatine returned.
Look, you either buy it or you don't, guys.
Okay? Honestly, yeah, that's more explanation than you get in Elektra, that one line.
Somehow Elektra returned.
Yeah. Oh, okay, perfect. Because we needed to make the movie. All right, Cycle, you went first last time, right?
Yes.
Okay, Banner, you're up. You will be deciding between Howard the Duck and Elektra on the beautiful point of number one, which is, what's that? Box office potential. Which had the worst? Howard the Duck or Elektra?
See, this is interesting. I think when you go to Elektra, you say, hey, look, Daredevil, at the time, it was decent. It made a little bit of money. In retrospect, it's not the greatest movie, but hey, it's fun. You have Jennifer Gardner, who red hot right at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's bring her character back. I could kind of see that. Sexy female character, mid-2000s. That's got decent box office potential to me. Howard the Duck came out in 1986. I was not born. But this just looks like a cookie-cutter 80s mascot movie. Right? So are they just jumping on some coattails here?
Yeah. Leah Thompson, a year, I mean, I know it's not cast, but a year after Back to the Future came out for her.
Yeah. So, there's nothing here that says, like, hey, everybody is going to come and see this movie. Whereas Elektra, even if you know, look, we are putting out a piece of shit, we're going to come out on top. This is going to be a black movie, and we're good, as opposed to a red movie. Where we lost money.
Yeah. All right. So you say worst box office potential goes to Howard the Duck?
I do.
Okay. We'll go second. So Howard the Duck is up 1-0. The second category will be number two, which is the cast. This is tough, man. All right. Let's go through the cast of Howard the Duck. Surprisingly, we have Leah Thompson and Tim Robbins. Yeah, no one's ever said that phrase in history. Tim Robbins.
Just here. Yeah, good old Tim Robbins.
And Howard the Duck. And then if you go to IMDb, there's like literally seven people credited as playing Howard the Duck. I don't know if this was like different people's costume. One of them, their picture on their IMDb profile is Admiral Akbar.
Okay, Tim I Rose. Have this answered for you.
That's amazing.
Ed Gale is a suit performer. Jordan Prentice is the additional suit performer.
You're on Wikipedia also.
Steve Sleep, yeah, Peter Baird, Mary Wells, and Lisa Stortz are all the puppeteers of Howard the Duck. And Chip Zine is the voice of Howard the Duck.
Okay, but what did Tim Rose do, the Admiral Akbar guy? You don't know?
He's a puppeteer.
He's a puppeteer.
Oh, so he also puppeteered Akbar. Okay, that's actually kind of fucking cool. Elektra? Jennifer Garner is capable in this. They really like neuter just the character of Elektra's like screen presence, because her whole like in this movie, which I watched regrettably pretty recently, I think I even talked about it on pod, But her whole character's like dynamic, like the point of her is that she is so emotionally stunted because of the way that she was raised by Stick and like forced to see all this trauma as a teenager that she can't establish any human connections. And so I literally feel like the director would be on set with Jennifer Garner being like, no, 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 too much charisma, less. Your character doesn't know how to talk to people. So like the cast is good, but like what you actually get from Elektra, it makes it really hard for a film to stand up when like the lead in it is basically like forbidden or not allowed by the director or the production team to have like any emotional or meaningful interaction with other people.
I'm gonna be honest with you, you're too good of an actor to be in this role. So
yeah,
tone it down a little bit.
The other thing they didn't do here, the villains up until like late second act when like they their power set just it becomes like way too much a focal point of the film. They're pretty interesting, but they didn't cast anybody in this of note. Like the budget, whatever it was thrown at in this, probably CGI on some of the bad guys. No disrespect to the guys playing the villains, but like Will Yun Lee as Kirigi, Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa, Banner, we just know him because he's Johnny Tsunami's grandpa in Johnny Tsunami, which I was, and then he's Shang Tsung in Mortal Kombat. But
yeah.
But he's not in the movie near enough. He's in like the opening and closing scene. So
yeah, I feel like he's never in any movie enough.
Yeah. I'm going to go worst cast here to Elektra just because Jennifer Garner, great actress, but is really like hand tied behind her back here. And the fact that you guys just read seven different people had to operate Howard the Duck and it had my girl Leah Thompson after Back to the Future. And even though he plays a character called Phil Blumbert, we got Tim Robbins in here, Academy Award winner. So, Cycly, it's up to you to decide
which
is the worst and which will advance to face Blue Beetle.
Oh,
and we're going to go off the script and the plot once again. All right, are you ready for me to read?
No, I feel like clarify. I'm scared. Yeah, go ahead.
You haven't seen either of these, right?
No.
Okay, well, perfect, which I think better. Makes you the perfect arbiter of justice here.
You're unbiased at this point.
I do want to watch Howard the Duck for sure.
I don't know, man. Be careful. All right. The plot
careful what you wish for.
A sarcastic humanoid duck is pulled from his homeworld to Earth, where he must stop an alien invasion with the help of a nerdy scientist and a struggling female rock singer. All right. Elektra, very similar plot. Elektra the warrior survives a near-death experience, becomes an assassin for hire. Oh, so again, now I guess they're saying it was a near-death experience at the end of Daredevil. She died in his arms. Becomes an assassin for hire and tries to protect her two latest targets, a single father and his young daughter, from a group of supernatural assassins.
So this is the problem, guys. This is... can't leave something like this to me. Because you know I'm sick. You know...
you are sick.
I just enjoy this, like, this kind of shitty stuff. Like, I enjoy bad movies. Oh, God, I feel like I'm about to watch a 16 seed beat a one. If you blindly just hearing those scripts and me picking the movie, I want to see this movie about a fucking duck that comes to Earth to prevent an alien invasion. That's, I'm like, I don't, what is this? I need to see this. Like, I am intrigued. Yeah. And put me in the late 80s.
I mean, Elektra from that sounds boring, let's be honest.
It doesn't sound exciting. And I'm trying to take away what I know about them. I was never into, like, I watched Daredevil, and I never was really as into it. And I don't know, maybe that's coming in. And then when I think of Howard the Duck, obviously I don't know too much about it outside of the plot, but it makes me, I said this last week on our draw show, that Howard the Duck really feels like a late 80s, early 90s, like where they did the... like we had these kind of like animatronic characters play into human universe, cartoon characters playing into the human universe. And I actually enjoyed, I actually think they work when I think of that kind of stuff. I mean, it's, I'm not saying they're good movies or anything, but as a kid, I found them really entertaining. It was fun to see worlds kind of mesh. And I really think just hearing, and maybe this is a compliment to an insult. I'm like hearing those, both of those plots, one sounds at least ridiculously entertaining, bad. Like, I love bad entertaining. There's bad and there's bad fun bad, right? Like, and hearing those, I'm like, I think I'd rather sit for an hour and a half and watch a movie about a duck. So I really thought Howard the Duck was going to be in the championship, if not the final four, but hey, we've seen miracles happen all the time every March.
And I mean, if you're going off of like, which of these are audiences more likely to be like, you know, I don't think I've seen that before, which is not necessarily always a good thing, but an Elektra movie based on like that premise of like, we get one every 2 years.
Yeah, at least Howard the Duck is doing something different.
I think right. Another thing that really hurts Elektra here is it's a sequel, which I guess it is. That's what they said in the synopsis. It's a sequel to Daredevil where she died. So like that, I think that really hurts it.
Yeah. And I, again, as someone saw Daredevil, I had no, it wasn't this movie. I was like, oh, I hope they make a movie about this. Because here she dies. Why would I be thinking, oh, I hope they bring her back. Somehow she returned. So I'm sorry to those listening. I'm not saying that Howard the Duck is better than Elektra. I'm just saying the parameters given to me, I just played by my own rules there. So I'm sorry about that.
The categories spoke.
All right, well, Elektra, you have a date with Blue Beetle in the second round. So the two second round matchups will be Madame Web versus Morbius, which, again, as Cycli said, might, for all intents and purposes, be the championship of the awful comic book movie madness tournament. And then we have Blue Beetle facing off against Elektra. So
it's a sick world when Steel and Howard the Duck are going home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jonah Hex can hang its head high because it didn't get a single point. So that's a good thing. Everyone else.
So does that mean Jonah Hex is the best worst?
Yeah,
comic it does, book yeah.
movie. It's How, the it's the least awful awful comic book movie.
I think to the Broforce Squad.
It's like I was just thinking, all the Howard the Duck fans who bought like hotel rooms for 2 weeks, you know, now they're going home early. And
they can't believe it. All their Championship of the Loser shirts are being shipped off to Africa. It's
yeah, they gotta sell their like tickets to the game now at like a discounted price.
I'm wondering if Suicide Squad is just like rubbing their hands from the wings, being like, next year it's wide open. You know, we could be in this.
God, yeah, that was the tough thing. I mean, there were some, obviously there's people at home was like, what about this movie? What about this movie? Yeah. Guys, this is not an easy list to put together.
Last four in, last four out, baby.
Yeah. We went with the ones where we were like, why the fuck would anyone go see this? And honestly, with Suicide Squad, the Joker being in it, like, you can at least understand the first one, why they would greenlight the movie. God. All right. Any final thoughts? Are we ready to move on to Protein Shake?
Let's do it.
All right. Our Protein Shake is the second part of our show where we talk about what is in our cup, also known as what have we watched lately? Let me just start with a shameless plug. The three of us on this pod did a movie commentary on A Quiet Place, which will actually, it'll be coming out on our channel a little bit closer to the release of A Quiet Place Day One. Cycli, anything you want to tease about this movie commentary we did or just your thoughts after revisiting it?
You need to turn the volume really high because we are...
Imagine if we did that. Just as...
I tried. It was really hard.
Did it way too long.
Yeah, that's true. You would commit. If anyone would commit to the bit, it would be you. Banner, anything you want to tease about it? I don't know if you remember it.
No, it was a good one. It was a good one. It was a fun one.
See, he doesn't remember it. It was awful. We got in a huge fight.
We did get in a huge fight. But I did it a blind commentary. I've seen the second one. I had not seen the first one. So that made it... That made it fun.
So you were blind. The movie was silent. Like, man.
Yeah, I was basically senses.
That's the most Banner thing, though. I've seen the sequel, but not the original. So,
honestly, Banner, if there was a Helen Keller of the pod, it would be you.
Thank you.
It's definitely a compliment. All right, Banner, we'll go to you first. What's in your cup? What have you seen lately?
All right. I saw I believe it was 2023, Ben Affleck, Hypnotic.
I have heard awful things about this.
Dude, this was a piece of shit. Like, it doesn't make sense. You felt every second of it. It was so long. It just didn't make sense. Who like, I don't even fucking know.
Rodriguez, I think.
Yes, Robert Rodriguez directed it, and like, I'm not his biggest fan, but this is the worst thing he's ever done, in my opinion. And he directed like 8 Spy Kids movies.
Do a lot of Spy Kids movies. It's almost like experimental filmmaking, right? It's like so fucking weird and trippy.
Yeah, it was just very confusing, and like it didn't like wrap itself up. Now, I will say the end scene, or kind of like the big twist at the end, I did not see coming, and it was pretty cool. But
fuck,
by the time
don't tell
we,
me that.
By the time no, let me I'm not done yet. By the time we get to that point, I'm just ready for the fucking movie to be over. You know what I mean? So like, yeah. If I would just go read about it, if I were you, instead of actually watching the movie.
Thank you for saving me from myself. Because, you know, if I hear good twist, I'm like, God damn it.
We're sick on this pod, as we make clear all the time.
We need help, man. Help us out. What did you watch this on? Not that I knew.
Peacock?
Peacocks were marching down the field. Sorry. Fresh Prince Miller.
Hypnotic. Yeah. All right, Ben, I'll go read about it after this then. Cycly, what have you seen lately?
So I'll start with the big one. Went and saw Dune 2 this past weekend with my wife, and we went and saw it on IMAX, which I don't usually do that often, but sometimes a movie comes out that you're like, if I'm going to go do a theater, this that's the way to see it. And I'll just start off with the fact that, as you guys just heard, the theater experience really quickly. We sat through 45 minutes of commercials and trailers. Mm-hmm. It used to be
insane.
And sadly, 75% of it was commercials. Like, when I say commercials, I'm like sitting at home watching insurance commercials, bubbly Pepsi, insurance, food, everything.
So
car.
Did you leave the theater and go buy a Buick?
I actually did. It did work on me, is what I'm actually most sick about. I bought so much candy. It was, I'll say really quickly, because I want to talk about the movie, it's just, I don't blame people for not wanting to go to the theater. Like, I mean, this, yeah. As someone who loves the movies, someone who, like, I enjoy going to the movie theater, I mean, it was incredibly awful, like, to have to sit there for 45 minutes waiting for your movie to even start. And this is a almost 3-hour long movie, which, you know, I was happy, or I was lucky. I was so excited about the film.
You literally need a trash can bag of popcorn to make it through that many commercials and a 3-hour movie.
People were standing up, stretching because it was so long. People were walking around. I mean, everyone was talking about it in the theater. Just absurd. So that, unfortunately, was a negative. But I will go to the positive about Dune. We could do a whole episode on this if we ever wanted to. But this is a type of movie I do feel like, unfortunately, you do want to see in theaters. Unbelievable cinematography, unbelievable score. Just, I mean, it's the type of movie that just kind of like makes your hairs on your neck stand up, because like it's so powerful and epic. The sound reverberating in your chest and things like that. I'm not going to call it that, but it's like, it feels like a modern day Star Wars. And when I say Star Wars, I don't mean the sequel prequels. I mean like originals. Like it just like it's impacting generation. Like again, it's like what film is supposed to be. It's an epic. It's entertaining. It's funny. It's all these sort of things. I really enjoyed it. Now, that's not to say it was a perfect movie. Unfortunately, there was a lot I felt like that was wrong with it. This is a 2-hour, 45-minute runtime, and it's really weird for me to say this. But sometimes you watch one of these movies and it feels rushed. It's weird to say about such a long movie. Like I could have sat there probably I would have rather had 45 more minutes of this movie than 45 minutes of commercials and trailer. If I'm going to sit for 3.5 hours in a movie theater, there were a lot of scenes that just like jumped quickly. It almost felt like we were in Rogue One. We're jumping from planet to planet. Obviously not jumping planets here, but you're jumping from random scenes and you're set up something and all of a sudden the characters are there, right? Like wait, this was so built up, it happened. And I get why they had to do what they did, but it did take away a little bit of the experience. So I would say the script it's not the best. I think Dune Part 1 had a better script. And at least probably just a better build up overall.
But when I talk about the what was great about this film is it's just the epicness you want in a movie. The performances are fantastic. Honestly, I thought Timothée Chalamet is way better than I expected him to be, because if you know the Dune story, wow, he kind of takes a massive personality twist about halfway through for certain reasons. I don't want to spoil anything. And that was the part I was like, I don't know if he's going to be able to become this person. And he does. I do feel like Zendaya is, what's that?
Oh, I just, I hate that I'm starting to like him.
Yeah, yeah. He does deliver a really good performance. Zendaya, I mean, I like her a lot as an actress, but I don't.
Don't you dare say a dirty word about her.
It just didn't feel like she kind of was like a side story. I mean, she only gave it was like she was told to just give a lot of facial reactions in this, and maybe they took away a little bit of her build up and her character. Same with Florence Pugh, not as in it as you would think, and she doesn't almost fit herself in the movie. It kind of is distracting, but the most distracting, in my opinion, is the Emperor, who is Christopher Walken, and I love Christopher Walken.
But you can only see Christopher Walken.
You can only, and he, it's not like he changes his voice. He still talks the Christopher Walken way. And it's a little distracting when he's playing this like dictator, like type emperor who's trying to burn down these houses and do these things. And so like,
he's not a big baddie.
He's not a big baddie. It's kind of, it was a little weird. But Rebecca Ferguson, I think, stole the show. Paul's mom, she delivers an iconic performance.
She's awesome. So,
yeah, she was really great. She carried the film, in my opinion, both her and Timothy. But I at the end of the day, like I said, we want to break this down in our five categories. When you guys see it, we should. But it's still, at the end of the day, is a great movie to watch. Like, I 100% recommend it. It's not a perfect film, but it's why we go to the theaters.
Now, I know there's like a shit ton of books. Some of them, like, to the where the movie picks up are like prequels. Do we know, I guess this is a two-part question, the Dune Part 1 and Part 2, like the films Denis Villeneuve made, is this all just the first book still, or is it two separate books that they've...
It's the first book.
It's all the first book.
And, the first book takes longer in terms of, like, when... Did you guys see Part 1 at least?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So really, you know, when he gets captured by the Fremen, There's like 3 years that goes by in the book. This this movie basically takes place like, you know, months later. Like they're like him learning from the Fremen, the resistance they have, the war on the Harkonnens and all that. So the book is elongated, and then this one they try to condense it. It's kind of like why I feel like it felt rushed, even though it was long.
And then does this end on a cliffhanger, or do we think that this is like at least? Because I don't know how the first book ends. Obviously, you won't spoil it. But
yeah,
is this like a conclusive ending, or at least
are
like
we getting another one?
No, we're definitely getting another one. It has an ending, and then it kind of ends the same way Part 1 ended. It's like, yeah, it has an ending, but immediately saying,
but it's not over.
It's not over. I mean, it's literally if they make a Part 3, which I know it's not in production at all yet, and it will probably be like 5 years, 6 years till it comes out. But it will start like immediately, you're like at the end of Part 2.
The next second, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is on my to-do list early next week to go see. So we'll have to review it sometime after. I do though. Like, I'd seen the first one. It's my aversion, I think, to like diving head first into Dune. I love Denis Villeneuve. I think I've loved all of his movies, but one probably. It was this, like, it's very dense subject matter. And like, again, when I wanted to read the book before and I looked at it and I was like, I'm basically like illiterate compared to like what this is asking me to do. So I need to watch like a recap for the first one just to refresh myself on. I remember one key character who didn't make it out of the film, but I need to make sure that I'm caught up.
I'll argue that Part 1, even though this one's getting way better reviews, like I will argue Part 1 might be better as a story in a movie. Like, Part 2 is just bigger. Like, just the fight scenes, the sound.
It's the exact... It sounds exactly how I describe Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah, that's actually a really fair point. Yeah.
Like, everything that you're saying, I feel like is echoing... I did, too. Yeah. I did, too.
Well, that's all the sale I needed. Nice. All right, Dune Part 2. All right, let me just, are you done cycling? Do you have anything else on that you want to add?
Yeah, no, that's it.
Real quick, just to get these things out of my like list of shit. I saw Steel past week. We already talked about it a lot, but did not hate it as much as I thought I would. I think I find myself being very forgiving, like Cycli was mentioning, of these movies that came out of a certain era, because like the ilk of what they are, like they can't help but be a product of their time, you know? So it's like, what are we really judging them as? Steel, it, I will say this, it throws the action at you in spades. And back then, they didn't have a choice, but everything's pretty much practical effects. So even though it's, you know, pretty flimsy in terms of, like, there's really not much plot here at all. Not that you need, like, a plot-heavy Steel movie, but, like, we just use any type of story mechanic to get from one action set piece to the other. I kind of enjoy Shaq in this role quite a bit. And they have, like, at least, they go to the well, I think, one too many times, but there's at least three gags in the movie where Steel has to, like, make a free throw or do something, like, basketball-related, and he can't do it. And it's pretty funny, but at a certain point, I'm like, dude, you've already done that fucking joke. Like, get another get another joke, please.
Get it, because Shaq can't hit free throws, though.
Oh.
Yeah, missed that, yeah.
There's one scene, though, he actually, like, pulls it off. He's, like, trapped in this, like, yeah, it's basically like a prison cell, but like the roof is open to it because it's not really a prison cell. And a grenade is in there with him, and he has to like basketball shot it into like this small compartment. And there's someone else in the room with him, and he makes the comment like, "I never make these." Then he drills it.
Only took him 37.
See, now I do
want to
watch it.
And then another one I'll just mention, this will be the last thing I talk about on pod. I did watch Jonah Hex as well, and I know, again, we just talked about it. And I really liked John Malkovich in it. It's probably the best thing I can add. He's great as a villain. I mean, you know how he's going to play everything same exact way. But, does he not just work as, like, a Confederate general, like, around the Civil War with really nefarious plans? Like, just everything about his, like, vocal delivery and his aesthetic, like, you don't have to change his look up very much, to be honest, for him to play that part.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember, like, not hating him.
Yeah.
Like, I was this is competent.
Yeah. And this is, I can't remember if Cycli said this about one of the movies he watched. I know he said it about Dune, but it's weird to say this about Jonah Hex. The movie is an hour, 21 minutes, and that's counting credits. I remember looking at last night, like,
short?
When... It's that short. And when the credits were rolling, it was at like 1:14. So I know this sounds blasphemous to say, but I could have used a little more runtime in Jonah Hex. It's not that anything feels like underdeveloped, but it just feels like whatever they did in the editing room, it feels like they fucking like destroyed this thing. Because his whole origin story, him being Jonah Hex, is literally told like over a flashback monologue as the opening credits are rolling. And I feel like the studio, and maybe, probably rightfully so, they were like, hey, this movie sucks. We need to cut 20 minutes out of it. And I'm sorry, but we just need to get straight to the part where he is Jonah Hex. So that's where Malkovich really probably like did his work and unfortunately got
you, you just need the director's cut.
Well, yeah. How do we get the Jonah Hex director's
How do we get the four-hour Jonah Hex director's cut?
But like, Jesus, no one's ever asked for that before.
The director's cut is three times longer than the actual movie.
Dude, that's something we would tweet at the director, and he would like fucking show up at our house. Like, hey, I have it on DVD if you
want to
watch it.
He's like, yo, you want that? I've been waiting for someone to ask.
Yeah, let me go buy a DVD player.
Yeah. Oh, I'll wait here on your couch. No, you won't.
No.
All right, that's all I'm gonna talk about. Because like, I had a really light protein shake anyway, and I know that stuff we already mentioned, but just thought I'd add a little bit of context to my. Previous evaluations, again, I'm a little bit ashamed, and this tournament has done this to me, where I don't hate some of these movies as much as the internet has told me I'm supposed to hate them. Banner, you got anything else?
The only thing, I'm going to piggyback kind of off of what you did. I did watch Morbius. This was I turned on Disney Plus, which, why the fuck was it on Disney Plus? I don't know. But it was like,
even Disney's like, why is this on here?
Yeah, Disney's like,
who approved this?
I'm sorry, but like, you might like this, and I'm like, god damn it. It was literally the night that we did the selection show, so I was like, fuck, now I have to watch it.
You're like, I'm going to start it as a joke an hour, 20 minutes later.
This was, I'll just, again, not too long on here, but this was, hey, let's take, we're going to take eight basic items that are in a movie. A love story, best friends turn enemies, you know, you get some sort of superpower, action, things like that. We're going to put eight of them in a bowl, and we're going to pull
cops
five of them out.
Cops investigating our protagonist.
Yes, yes, cops investigating it. We're going to put them all in a bowl. We're going to pull five out. We're going to give it to a third grader and say, here, make a story.
It's like the Family Guy with the...
And that's what we got here. Visually, I think when, like, Morbius and... I don't even know what the fucking bad guy's name was. That's how bad this thing was.
Corbius.
God, please tell me that's his name.
Because that, if that was...
It is now.
Like, you wouldn't even be shocked.
It is now.
His name was Milo.
Yeah.
Well, when, was the nickname.
When they were fighting, visually, like, CGI, all of that was great. But, like... I don't know. It just looked like somebody was taking like a visual effects like master's final in college or something.
What That's grade what the movie... do you think they got on it?
I mean, it was, I would say it's a solid B. It's a solid B.
Okay, you can live with that.
There was like the almost like the like smoky waves kind of at the end that trailed as they like jumped from one building to the other. That was cool. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad idea. It was a little bit of a new look. But yeah, other than that, didn't have a whole lot going for it.
That's fair. Cycly was texting us. He's like, it's not even like bad good. It's just...
It's just fucking bad.
It's just bad and poor put together. Poor film. All right, Cycly, anything else you watched?
Jared Leto is trying way too fucking hard.
Oh, yeah.
He's like trying to win an Oscar and you're in a fucking vampire movie. Okay, chill the fuck out, dude.
He morbed when he should have morbed in, I don't know. So I'll go, but I'll piggyback off that too, because I did just watch Morbius today and Catwoman today because I'm fucked
up. Is everything okay at home?
No.
That's a rough day, dude. Thank you for doing that.
I did put them on in the background, so I was like, I was just sitting there watching them. But I will say, like, Morbius just has no excuse. That's my problem with it. Like, I told Horns this, like, it belongs in a different era. It belongs in the Catwoman era. It belongs in the early to mid-2000s. I said, like, Ang Lee's, like, Hulk or, like, late 90s Batman's. Like, it doesn't fit in what modern superhero movies have become. It's poor quality overall. It's not even just the acting or the script. I mean, the way the cinematography, the way the directing, the camera work, like, all of that just seems... out of this era, and it was really bizarre and takes you out of it. So I don't know what they were trying to accomplish. And again, I'm saying this, like, all the memes and everything, like, I stand by this. This wasn't bad good. Like, it wasn't bad fun. It just really just was a bad movie.
The funnest part about this movie was that the internet tricked Sony to re-release it.
That's the most iconic thing. That's why
that is what this movie is going to be remembered for, and that's not a good thing.
The movie itself, like, and I love that Sony pulled it immediately on Sunday when it had only made like $200,000, like, in that re-release. But go ahead, Lawrence.
No, I was going to say, like, you pull it on Sunday, the theater's like, I mean, you're not saving that much money, but I guess embarrassed.
You know they were just embarrassed. Like,
it was a two-day total.
Damn it, that 9:30 Sunday morning matinee was sold out.
Oh,
fuck!
Man, I was busy. I'll finish it off with, I watched Catwoman 2. I referenced that. Now, that movie does feel like a product of its era. I get why they did some of the things they did. I don't get why they did some of the things they did. I stand by what I said at the beginning of the pod. The script itself, like, the plot itself, would have been decent had they done a few other things. I could, because they obviously play for a sequel. They obviously play for, you know, maybe entering more of the universe. I don't know, but Halle Berry, peak celebrity at the time.
Hadn't
movie
she just won the Oscar for Monsters Ball? Because I think she won an Oscar and a Razzie in the same year.
And then she accepts the Razzie in person, I believe, which is pretty iconic.
That's pretty cool.
What a fucking team player.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'll be honest, guys, she wasn't the problem. She really wasn't.
Yeah.
There was just directing and script choices made in a movie that could have been coherent. And then I'll finish with, I also watched...
God, that's bad when, like, the best case scenario is a coherent movie.
Yeah.
like, but it's great. It's like...
Watching, like, it felt like Morbius. I'm not joking. Like, that, it felt like they were products of each other. And you're talking about movies that came out 20 years apart. Like, that's what is embarrassing about Morbius. You know, Catwoman has an excuse. That's what movies were like. There's a lot of the, like, CGI animation, like, we got in The Matrix. Not the first Matrix. Remember, like, that, like, weird, like, it... They would like slow down Neo when he's flying, but it's obviously computerized. Like there was a lot of that with Halle Berry. And, but again, was Morbius's excuse. And then guys, cause I'm really weird. I watched Dune this weekend, 1984 Dune.
Oh yeah. That one's always kind of scared me off.
Oh my God. First of all, this movie is 1984. It comes out 7 years later than A New Hope. Yet it feels like it's 20 years older than A New Hope, which I don't, I like, you would think, like, David Lynch did this, guys. Like, I mean.
I hate David Lynch, though. I have, Mulholland Drive is, I think, my third worst movie of all time.
There's a hot lesbian scene. How can you hate that movie?
That's how bad it is. There's also a scene with, like, a garbage
monster. Yeah, that speaks volumes.
So, first of all, Dune 1984 puts both part one and part two in one movie. It has like an hour and 40-minute runtime. So, it's obviously feels rushed.
So, we went from an hour and 40-minute runtime to what? Probably
2-3 hour long movies almost.
5.5, 6 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say 5.5, 6 hours of runtime.
Yeah.
Let's triple it.
And I don't think maybe you would have felt it had you not seen the new Dunes or read the book or something. But like after watching the two Dunes, you're like, oh, man, they are really rushing it. But this is a bad. It's good. Like it's almost so bad you can't take your eyes away. And obviously they're limited so much on what they could do. I mean, think about if you've seen Dune 1, like how would they make this movie in the 80s? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that they tried. All of it is clearly on like close set type. It feels like almost like Wizard of Oz type where it's like clearly a set. But it does not feel like 1984. Like there are movies that are this old that look better. But if you're interested in Dune all of a sudden because of the movies like I was, it's definitely bad fun. There's a scene where Patrick Stewart is holding a dog.
Patrick Stewart is in this?
Yeah, Patrick Stewart is in this. There's actually a decent cast.
He's holding a dog doing what?
Charging at the Harkonnens. Like the Harkonnens are invading, like you remember in part one. Yeah. It's all part of that conspiracy to kill the Atreides. And I don't know why he's holding a dog, but he's like holding like this like French bulldog or something, and like he's leading the charge against the invading Harkonnens. I had to rewind it like four times and call my wife in the room. I'm like, watch this, and we were both cracking up. It's a hilarious scene.
Some people fight with swords. I fight with a French bulldog.
And he has a sword in the other arm. He's just charging. Okay.
Why not both?
So, Dune, 1984. What a weird weekend for me. Dune Part 2.
Yeah, this is one you'll look back on.
Morbius, Catwoman, Dune 1984.
This is when you look back and be like, really ran the gamut there.
Yeah, don't do drugs, kids.
Or do. All right, that brings us to our last part of our show. Our Dune, even lift, bruh.
Bruh.
Can you do the high-pitched one? Okay, I guess that'll work. This is our question and answer segment. We ask a question that we leave you guys with as a discussion topic. Today, we continue our countdown, as we have been doing for about the past year and a half, of what are the bros' top 100 movies of all time. The list is a running doc, or spreadsheet, I guess we have, linked at the top of our website at broforcequad.com. It's also in the description of this video. Before we dive into it, we're each going to do one movie again tonight to keep the list going. Banner, why don't you tell the people what these lists are, because they are not the AFI Film Institute's greatest pieces of cinema of all time. They're a little more unique to us here on the show.
Yeah, this is my top 100. There are, of 100 movies, there are probably 75 that shouldn't sniff a single top 100 movie of anything legitimate. These are specific to me. They may be tied to a moment in our life or a nostalgia feeling. Jeff, Rush Hour 2, learned this. First DVD ever had. That's why it's on the top 100. Has nothing to do with this is a great movie. Yeah. Although most of them are great movies.
And they're very unique to us, like you said. You
very unique to us.
Yeah, that's their list. All right, Cycle, we'll go to you first. Your number 41 movie of all time was The Departed. Banner's was The Mummy. Mine was Groundhog Day. What clocks in one ahead of those at number 40 on your list?
This is a German film called Der Untergang, which means downfall. It is a movie about...
How do you spell that?
D-E-R. Der Untergang. U-N-T-E-R-G-A-N-G. So downfall.
G-A-N-G. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, so do you guys remember a long time ago when we were like college, like those YouTube videos of Hitler like fucking losing it because of like... the BCS championship or Nintendo being late. Like, yeah. You remember that? Yeah. Like where Hitler just like loses it. And those videos were everywhere. Like Harry Potter got delayed 6 months. And like, it was like Hitler going crazy about Harry Potter being delayed. There's like thousands of these videos. And so I was like, after like seeing so many of these, I was like, what movie is this from? Cause like the scene itself is extremely tense.
Yes.
And, like Hitler in the scene is dismissing his generals and he's absolutely losing it. But the subtitles are hilarious because it's about like Harry Potter and Nintendo. And so I was like, as someone who loves like history and war movies and things like that, I was like, okay, I kind of want to watch this actual film. So I looked it up and it was called Der Untergang or Downfall. And I watched it and the movie is based on it's actually extremely accurate. Like it's based on Hitler's secretary's book about the last like 5-6 days in the bunker and what things were like down there. And this movie is just if you are historical buff, character piece, just powerful acting, like obviously just such a impactful era that's still we're still dealing with today. It really, one, it doesn't humanize Hitler by any means. I mean, he's still, so it's a German film, so there was a lot of controversy in that, like doing a movie about Hitler, but it just shows like what he had succumbed to in his last days and it's just like the mental like loss he was at and what the how crazy it was, people living in this bunker. And it's a performance for the ages. It's one of the best acting performances ever by, I think his name is Bruno Ganz, who plays Hitler. And this movie is just depressing because it shows at the same time the German, like the people, the children, like the suffering that like Hitler caused. Like we always talk about what Hitler did to rest of Europe and the Jews and the Holocaust and all of that. But what he did to his own people too is something that we don't, you know, it's hard to look at like Germans as the victims too, but you know, only 30% of people voted for him. And there's the play on like the German population and how Hitler was wanting to kill the German population, blaming them for losing the war, saying, you know, we don't deserve to survive as an ethno group and all these things. But it's not just Hitler, it's Göring and Goebbels and Himmler, and just shows like the chaos of the last days of the Third Reich. And again, because this movie is actually based in history, it makes it that much more powerful. This movie, I think it's a tragedy that it didn't win any Academy Awards. I think it's because of what the subject matter was. Yeah. I think it would have been hard for like them to make this a focal point because
also I don't think foreign films got near enough respect.
Not back then. It is a tour de force by every means. I mean, if you look up every critical review of this film, and it's not just like a heavy film. Like I've rewatched this multiple times. Like it's not just like, oh, I really like that movie. It was really good. Like AFI top 100 for sure kind of thing. I'm like, the movie hits hard on so many levels, and it really does make you enjoy watching it, even though it's a very difficult subject matter. I think to any historical buff or just movie buff, like this is a movie, it's a must watch, and it deserves more attention. And I'm glad those YouTube videos happened because I would never have probably heard of this film if it wasn't for that monumental era that we had.
I'm gonna have to check this out. Here's a few amazing stats about this. Google's rating of it with 840 reviews It has a 4.9 out of 5.
Wow.
It's unreal, guys.
That's absurd. That
I
means
don't think
like
I've
one
ever seen
person...
that before.
No, it almost feels made up, but that has a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb, which is notoriously ruthless. It has an 8.2 out of 10.
Yeah, only problem is why it's kind of like probably lower on my list, because I mean, I felt like probably when I watched it the first time, it's top 20. The ending kind of maybe like Hitler kills himself and there's still like 30, 40 minutes and the Russians are invading and the Russians take over. Hitler kills himself in the Russia. I mean, that's how it happened in real life. And it just kind of like peters out. So it's like the epic, it was kind of like, almost like, did you guys see like in Oppenheimer where they blow up the nuke way too early in the film and then it like slows down heavily with like politics. That's the only fallback on the movie. Like that's literally the only negative I can think of.
Wow, I'm glad this is this again. Things like this are the beauty of these lists, because you can have that and then three above it you have Old School. So.
Yeah, very similar films.
So yeah, like there we go. That's what this is all about.
We can also go across the bros, and we have this. Thurman has The Great Dictator, a silent film, Charlie Chaplin, yeah. I believe. And I have the Jumanji movie with The Rock. So
and Jungle Cruise.
And Jungle Cruise. So, you know what? If you don't like our top
sorry,
one, let's go
sorry,
fuck yourself.
Bro v bro, Jungle Cruise.
We don't
Cruise
apologize
versus...
for nothing on the Pro 4 squad.
Fuck off if you have a problem with it. All right, good shit, Cycle. I'm going to check that out. Banner, your number 41 movie was the 1999 Brendan Fraser action epic, The Mummy. What is one ahead of that at number 40?
Number 40, this is the 2002 Spider-Man. Again, this is one of those movies that you vividly remember seeing in theaters. This, in my opinion, along with X-Men, started the successful superhero craze, which I know that we're a little fatigued right now with that. But when this came out in the early 2000s, I mean, this changed the world, man, especially for me. I loved this movie. Doesn't hold up as much today. Went back and watched it a couple years ago, and it's a little bit of a rough watch. But it keeps on giving if you've seen Homecoming, because Tobey Maguire's performance in that was, No Way Home, not Homecoming. Yeah. No Way Home. His performance in that was incredible, and we wouldn't have got that if we didn't have this. So kind of bookended the superhero craze, if you will, Tobey Maguire. Didn't even think of that till now.
One of the kisses of the aughts, for sure.
Oh, yeah. The upside down kiss. Oh, God.
Pretty sure it won MTV's best kiss.
I was going to say, like, everybody on the face of the planet has, like, recreated that kiss.
Yeah, you and I did that one night. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. And then that other night.
Well, I wanted to go upside down, but you were like, no, you wouldn't come down.
I didn't want you to hurt yourself. I didn't want you to hurt yourself.
That's you are kind.
Wait, what? You guys kiss?
No, man. Don't worry about it.
No, never. Absolutely not.
Okay, weird. Yeah, I mean, just iconic movie. Don't have much else to say about it. Maybe it's coming up on my list. Maybe it's not.
Maybe go fuck yourself.
Maybe go fuck yourself.
Maybe go fuck yourself.
All right, my number 41 was Groundhog Day. Of course, the Bill Murray classic. And my number 40, funny because Cycly actually mentioned this movie earlier, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Hey.
Love it.
Yeah, so this, I think at the time... This was, if I remember right, just because I don't know when Solo was announced. Was this the first Star Wars anthology movie that we'd ever heard was actually being made?
Yes, okay. It was.
And I remember the plot to it, even though it's just like a one-off line in A New Hope, we had always kind of talked like, dude, that would actually be pretty fucking cool to see. Mm-hmm. Like, how the Rebels stole the Death Star plans. And I know everyone always joked in A New Hope, like, oh, really? There's like just one fucking hole on the Death Star that you shoot to blow up. And this is maybe the greatest retcon of all time.
Yeah, for sure.
Because what if that hole was purposely put there by the creator of the Death Star, who always had guilt, similar to Oppenheimer, about creating this massive weapon of destruction, knowing that he needed to put a failsafe in to destroy it? It's just like a perfect jumping off point for this movie. And the way that it's all done cloak and dagger with this group assembling and, you know, Jyn Erso the entire time, you're like, well, your dad is actually a part of this plan. Can we trust you when the time comes, if you have to pull the trigger? Like, what will you do? What choice will you make? Seeing Mads Mikkelsen as not an antagonist, I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of a movie where that's the case. He's always a bad guy, and he's a pretty good one. The incredible CGI of the late Peter Cushing as Tarkin. Yeah. I mean, wow. That technology, way ahead of its time. And I think just kind of the world building here, like, look, at the time, I don't think we knew where the sequel trilogy would end up, like, sitting with fans. But when you go back and look at it, this is the one, like, for me, the safe haven with everything that's come, like, since Disney acquired Star Wars, where I can say, I don't care who you are, objectively, this movie fucks.
By
and far. Yeah, and it works on its own. It works as a prequel to the originals. It works in the landscape of the sequel trilogy, even though, like, chronologically, it doesn't take place when those do. And yes, Cycli did mention there is, like, a, especially towards the end of the first act, there's a lot of planet jumping that happens, and you're kind of like, whoa, can fucking take a break here. But I mean, I'll just end with that Darth Vader scene.
That at the ending. Yeah. That's the only flaw in the movie, is that, like, early on first act jumping around, messiness. But my God, this movie, the third act and the final, like, 5 minutes. Like, if it doesn't make you want to turn on A New Hope immediately, like, you don't have a soul. Like, this movie, by far the best thing Disney has done with Star Wars, by far the best movie, in my opinion, of all of the Star Wars stories, the sequel trilogy, hands down. I mean, they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. Just awesome. Banner, what do you think? One of my favorite commentaries, our Rogue One commentary.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, as I would say, the probably the biggest Star Wars head on the pod. I'll talk about it later.
Okay. I like these.
Yeah. And this is a great film. And we'll talk about it later. It's a good one. Put it on ice.
Awesome.
Put it on ice.
Perfect. Okay. As we let the people go, episode 221, any last words of wisdom or advice? Like, what do you want to leave the people with?
Left lane is the passing lane, people. Passing lane or the fast lane. Get the fuck out of the way.
Left lane is not for bitches. Banner, how about you?
Unless there's an emergency vehicle coming, then don't get out of the... I mean, get out of the way, but, like, pull over. Don't just keep speeding. Guys, let's be respectful.
It's a cardigan, but thanks for noticing.
Yeah. Look, guys, you never know who's in the back of the ambulance. You never know whose house is on fire. It could be yours. It could be your grandma, you know, fell and had to call life alert. So here's the ambulance coming.
But honestly, if that's the only thing that gets you out of the way of the ambulance or the fire truck, you are still a piece of shit. Like, it
doesn't
have to be your burning town.
But also, just by me, like, mentioning that, maybe I just tricked you to think that, like, your grandma is in the back of every ambulance and now you'll pull over.
Sure. Whatever works. Be better at the barbershop. Don't take a risk. Just don't do it. Don't get the tapered fade that you've never got before. You can't pull it off. And especially don't fuck with any hair dyes. Like, we're not doing blue or anything weird. Like, you're not a K-pop singer. Unless you are. And then I have some follow-up questions. Why? Yeah, still don't, actually. Please don't. All right, for the mad scientist, Brian Banner, our legal counsel, Ronnie Cycli, I'm the mayor, Jeff Hornacek. We are the Bro 4 Squad podcast. Thank you guys so much for checking us out. Here's where you can find us, at Bro 4 Squad on pretty much any social media, Twitter, Threads, Instagram. Type in Bro 4 Squad as three words on Letterboxd, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, which is probably, you can find everything we have. It's also all on our website, bro4squad.com, where you can check out the awful comic book movie Madness Bracket and help us vote on those matchups on our YouTube channel as well. Till next time, we need to get Cycli enrolled in therapy, because what the fuck has this guy been watching the past few days?
It's only going to get worse, guys.
How? Like, what could you possibly watch that would make it worse? Like, even a Serbian film
is Banner's top different. 100.
That hurt a little.
Shit.
Jesus.
It's like a personal attack.
God.
Because it is a personal attack.